Welcome to the Nehajaw Chuan Podcast. This is Isaac. This is episode 20. In this episode, Jess and I continue our discussion on Bruce's teacher, Baihua, and his training in Hong Kong. And we look at an article, or continue looking at an article from Mo Ming in the Martial Cultivation Journal. Then we talk about the shifting of the weight in cloud hands and one of my favorite subjects, tucking of the tailbone. Also, Jess and I just did another interview that's going to be coming out on the Patreon pretty soon. It's another one of Bruce's senior students. So check that out. And as always, there's the other training stuff on the Patreon. And pretty soon we're going to be doing some bigger stuff, bigger projects. I can't really get into it right now, but if you enjoy this episode, I think you'll really dig what we're getting into. All right. Take care and enjoy the episode.
Welcome back to the Nehajaw Chuan Podcast with Jess and Isaac. Getting back to about opening the energy gates of your body by V.K. Francis, we've been discussing his time in Hong Kong with the teacher Baihua that he learned from there. And one of the things I remember reading on an article years ago on the internet, which I can't remember exactly where I read it, but it was that when Bruce first got to Hong Kong, he read in the newspaper an advertisement for a teacher who was starting a Baihua class. And so here's this foreigner in Hong Kong, just happened to be, or maybe someone pointed it out to him in the newspaper, that there was this class was about to start. So he's like, oh, I like Baihua, I'm going to go check it out. So he went to the class, and there was Baihua was the one who had put the ad in the paper. And he would, you can imagine his shock in like the late 1970s when a foreigner came walking up from a Chinese language advertisement.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, it says something about him that he was open to teaching him too,
I think. Right?
That was risky at that time, probably. Yeah.
I wonder, yeah. And I mean, hey, but anybody, you know, Baihua people are rare enough. So when someone comes to your door, you know, hey, there's somebody who likes it too. But that was a funny twist of fate that led him there. We're going to look at Mo Ming's article from the Journal of Martial Cultivation, Volume 1, Number 2. An excellent martial arts journal that's been making the rounds on the internet. Some really good articles in there. And Mo Ming, he gives a great biography of him here, as well as his own story of martial arts training. So he talks about his life as a martial artist, his other teacher, Mr. Young, who looks like he knows what he's doing. And
it sounds like Mr. Young was his teacher more than Baihua. Baihua's more his grand teacher, it sounds like.
Yeah, it's, you know, he talks about his training and the different stuff they were doing in Hong Kong. And then he finally gets the chance to meet Mr. Baihua. And he explains that they had a dinner. I remember when I first had dinner with him and my classmates, he knocked my heaviest classmate, who weighs over 200 pounds, off balance with just one finger. So that's a classic type of internal martial arts story. Just knocked him over with one finger. So that speaks having martial arts ability.
Yeah, I don't know. I just hear that. 200 pounds. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, I'm more than that. No.
That's 30 pounds lighter than me, but sure. Go back. Anyway.
So carrying on from that, they got to meet him at the dinner. He demonstrated his power. And then he says, when it was my turn to touch hands with him, he put his fist up and then he placed a finger on my fist and tossed me around like he was tossing a toy. I felt his power flush over me like a wave and it swept me away. And then he spends the rest of the night, you know, lecturing them and teaching them. And that he started even talking about time and space and the theory of relativity in traditional Taoist terms. So it sounds like Baihua was way into mystical Taoism and stuff like that. In terms of the fighting aspect of it, I remember in B.K. Francis' other book, Power of Internal Martial Arts, he talks about how Baihua had, you know, grown up during the height of the Cultural Revolution and had seen, you know, the kind of violence that was going on in the streets at that point, which is pretty hardcore. So it sounds like his idea of martial arts was, you know, not just for sport or just for health, but, you know, for actual street fighting and surviving in incredibly dangerous circumstances. So that sounds like he was probably pretty badass.
The one thing Bruce told me about him was that, you know, he never had to hit anybody more than twice.
Oh, yeah, that's a real deal. You know, I mean,
so, you know, ouch.
Yeah, what a different world, you know.
Sure, that period of time was, well, I mean, is it though really? I mean, fuck.
No,
there's,
I mean,
there's lots of riots in the streets right now. So
right, this is nothing, man. Yeah, good.
No,
I mean, you never know. I mean, it could happen anywhere, obviously.
You know, but yeah, he clearly grew up in a tumultuous time for sure. But you know, it speaks to the you know, the amount of the training that he did. You know, the Taoist stuff sounds like was a big part of his you know, his training, and he kept it. So
and his teaching, yeah. Yeah, lifelong enthusiasm for Taoism and esoteric
I mean, what I find really interesting is that, you know, he trained with Leo as a child and still kept that as his main you know, system, and didn't, I mean, he learned other stuff, but clearly that core foundation that he learned was a big part of it.
Yeah, and is interested in Chinese philosophy and
yeah, well, that's the non-martial part of it, if you will.
Yeah, and that's its own thing, obviously. So he goes on to say he describes that Mr. Bai his power wasn't because he's physically strong. In fact, quite the opposite. It's because he's using the physical power of a much stronger opponent against them and adding his own power when the opponent is losing balance. So that seems like a pretty solid internal martial arts strategy. You let the other person exert themselves, and then if you're able to get them off balance, boom, you add your own force at that point.
Yeah, I mean, that's the sort of classic, you know, method of, you know, borrow and return and all that sort of stuff, you know. Tai Chi was maybe the more predominant thing at this time. Mm-hmm.
Because his book has a Tai Chi chapter in it.
Yeah, his book's a bit more Tai Chi than Bagua or Xingyi, but that also could be because Tai Chi is infinitely more popular than Xingyi or Bagua, so, you know. But the principles.
More accessible, too, yeah.
Yeah, but the principles, I think, all carry over, and it's not, you know, it's not any different. But yes, it's like Bruce, I think he gravitated towards the meditation and Taoist stuff, you know, as much or more than the martial arts stuff as he got older.
Absolutely. And maybe that's part of the natural process of.
Yeah, I think so, you know.
So the rest of the article has some pretty interesting philosophical concepts, talking about heaven and earth and Taoism and Lao Tzu. Really good stuff. So if you ever want to read an article about internal martial arts and philosophy, this one in the journal here by Mo Ming is really good reading. Moving on to the next section of opening the energy gates of your body, we're at Cloud Hands Lesson 2. Point your tailbone down and slowly shift weight. Check that your tailbone is pointed to the ground and your spine is straight. So that's not just shifting. First, you start off by doing something with your tailbone, which is to point it to the ground to straighten the spine. So that's what you do in standing, I'd say.
Yeah, this is another one of those things that I think often gets kind of bungled. That what he's saying is, he's not saying push your pelvis forward, which is what a lot of people do mistakenly, where they actually kind of bring the bones of the pelvis forward. You know, it's very literal. It's the tailbone. It's the last tiny little bit of your spine, right? And so mostly what you're doing is letting the lower part of your spine, those lower vertebrae, flatten out. And then if you just relax, you're the coccyx, that little bone at the base of your tailbone, that thing can go forward, it can go straight down, and it can go a little bit, tiny bit back, right? So in this, it never goes back. And what you're doing here is you're just letting it go down straight with a very light tuck at the end. So it's like, you know, if you think of it as a straight line, it's a straight line with a tiny little curve at the bottom, you know.
So that's the type of alignment that you want to keep throughout Cloud Hands. You don't want to twist your spine. You want to keep that tailbone slightly dropped and your straight spine nice and straight without getting bent.
the hard part is as you get closer to having all of your weight on one leg, there's a tendency for the tailbone to want to lift. And so you got to keep that going down as you shift over.
Hmm. And so, yeah, then it teaches the, shifting 100% of left to right, as you were talking about before. He recommends that the shifting must be slow and steady, and as far as possible, free of any jerks or spasms, the speed should remain constant. So that's that sense of a very smooth shift, slow, even, and complete.
Yeah, I mean, this is like I said, you know, this is kind of the main, you know, skill, if you will, that this whole thing is based on, the ability to shift your weight, because you know, not only is it useful in martial arts and sort of that sort of stuff, but I mean, if you just think about walking or, you know, any activity, you're going to be shifting your weight back and forth at some point, and the more stable you are when you do that, the more efficient that activity is going to be. I mean, it can be swinging a golf club, you know. So the tailbone is sort of this very small thing that moves a little tiny bit, and that's separate from your pelvis. Frequently people overdo it, and they push the pelvis forward and kind of suck their stomach in to get the sense of that tailbone pointing down. That's not what you want to do. The action of the tailbone pointing down, which is different from the tailbone pointing forward, I should add, is that it comes from higher up in your spine. So, as you let the lower back release, much like you do in standing, your tailbone, you know, just has more freedom of motion, and it points down towards the floor. So you're doing, you know, minimal amount of effort. It shouldn't feel like you're pushing it forward, and it definitely shouldn't feel like you're contracting any kind of muscles in front of your torso. And it's like the separation of these different parts is a big part of this, you know. So as you're shifting, it's like you'll feel things moving around and wiggling or wanting to wiggle, and just the ability to get it, you know, from the top of your head to your tailbone as one piece as you shift is really like it takes a lot. It's a lot harder than it sounds.
No doubt. So the next, a couple of instructions, keep a 70% rule applied to your leg width. You don't want to go way too far apart, but not too close together. You'll find a comfortable place. He also suggests having a partner to practice with. So one person can check that your lower back is straight. The other person can watch your hips. We often have done it where one person, touches your knees, so you become aware of how your knees are shifting or moving forward and back as you shift.
Yeah, you can. I mean, that is absolutely the best way to do it. You can use props, you can use like a chair and, or a foam thing or what, there are ways of doing it without that. But having a human hand on your body is definitely the best way to go. However, the person putting their hand on you should know what they're doing, because a lot of times people put their hands on you and they don't really have a clear sense of what's happening, or they have the wrong, sense of what's supposed to be happening. And, it becomes this struggle to try to do something because this person's holding you in in sort of this uncomfortable way. And so it really, you have to trust the person you're working with but absolutely, if you have a good training partner, that is worth a lot.
And I found that having someone just, they don't have to like force your knees into any specific spot, but just having them touching your knees makes you aware of how much or how little they're moving and how much you're depending on your knees to sort of carry you from side to side, rather than that stretching of the thigh and the quad area. That's always instructive.
Yeah, they should be a feedback mechanism, not a correction, right? They should be letting you know when you do something wrong, not trying to tell you what to do. That's my sort of take on it.
Yeah.
Unless it's a teacher, if it's a teacher, then they should tell you what to do and you should do it. But
they can criticize all they want.
that's a different relationship, you know.
Right. So important points to remember, you know, he recommends don't go for it 100% because then you can blow yourself up. So you want to hold back a little energy, and then moderation protects old injuries. I think, you know, once you're shifting side to side, and if you have injuries in your legs, it'll start to call them out. So that's an opportunity to start learning how to shift without inflaming pre-existing injuries. And I think once you get shifting, it can help build up strength in the knees.
Yeah. I mean, this is where that 70% thing is, you know, if you do it a little bit, you know, and you work your way up to doing more and you're careful, you won't hurt yourself. But if you try to do a lot, you might hurt yourself. So,
right.
It's definitely an important piece of this.
Yeah. I mean, he repeats it so much that those of us who've been around a while, it can get tiresome. But I think when I first learned, that was a real important point to get across. I appreciated it.
Yeah. I mean, it's the hardest thing to not push it.
Not do all that you want to do. So now he moves into the mechanics of the joint, the ball and socket being like a mortar and a pestle, where one sort of smoothly connects into the other. And then he talks about the synovial fluid, the compressive fluid in between the joints. So the muscles align the bones in the joint, you know, keeps it all stable. But you want that hydraulic power of that synovial fluid between the joints to sort of be driving your strength.
For a period of time, this is what Bruce really focused on. And this idea that there's a hydraulic system in the body is hugely useful in all internal martial arts. So it's more a part of heaven and earth. In Energy Gates, it's really just kind of the introduction to the concept. But the idea, and then Bend the Bow, it's taken to like its full potential or whatever. But this idea that there is, beside the sort of mechanical movement of the ball and socket, there is the goo inside of the joint, right? And that your mind, just like it can affect the muscles and the ligaments and the tendons, it can also affect this goo. And when you start to move, for example, lymph is a big part of that. Synovial fluids is also part of that, right? So it's not just the fluid in your joints. It's all the fluids. Blood is a big part of it, right? So when you start to move, these fluids start to pump, and you know, that's what makes this stuff make the human body healthier, as far as I can tell, is that when these fluids are pumping smoothly, the human body, you know, functions better than when these fluids aren't, right? It's just like your car, you know, if it doesn't have oil in it, it's going to stop working, right?
Right.
And so you can think of the fluids in terms of this is just that's keeping the joints lubricated, keeping the internal organs soft and squishy, you know, that's what these fluids do. So what you first just want is the sense of the alignment, right? That the joint is not misaligned. And then once the joint isn't misaligned, it takes pressure off of it, right? Because the muscles are taking the weight off of the joint. And that allows the joint, when it flexes and does its ball and socket thing, to pump these fluids, right? And it does it with or without you being aware of it, if you do the movement correctly. And then there's things you can do to sort of, once you can feel it, to expand on that and increase pressure and things like that, direct it, refine it.
So I think you're touching on the next thing he talks about after the proper alignment of the knee joint. He's talking about the knee as a weight transference joint, not a weight bearing joint, which if you've been around, you've heard him say a million times, if someone were to press downward on the crest of the hip from the side of your body, the alignment would be such that the pressure goes directly into the center of the arch of the foot. No pressure should be felt in the knee joint. Now that's kind of easier said than done, but I think over the years I've definitely got a way better connection, you know, so my knee doesn't take the strain nearly as much because I'm sort of aligned it properly. Especially the opening in the back of the knee. And now the weight seems to flow through it on the muscles, like you were saying, rather than getting stuck in the knee joint like it had been when I first started.
You know, the way he always described it is the knee can act as a shock absorber, right? And transfer the pressure from one part of the So the biggest mistake people make is they bend it too much, right? And it can't you know, once it's been to past its 70%, it really can't absorb enough pressure to spring back. Likewise, if it's locked all the way, it can't absorb pressure to spring back. So finding this, you know, this sweet spot where the joint has its spring but is still engaged. I mean, that's the, you know, that's the art in this whole thing. It's, you know, it's not exactly, you know, something you can just say it's right here, because it's different in every person. And, you know, the amount that you got to like move certain things in your body is always a little different. But essentially, it's when you can, I'm going to try to make this a physical thing. Okay. When you can put your arm out and someone can lean on your arm and you can move your shoulder forward and back, right? You're creating a space between your shoulder blade and your spine. And that's sort of that physical opening and closing that occurs whenever you do any kind of motion, right? So in your hip, that's what he's talking about, that little flex and, you know, expansion in your hip as you move side to side. So, you know, you're not really talking about like a giant physical motion here. You're talking about, you know, maybe in your hip, you're talking about, you know, maybe a quarter of an inch or something.
Sure. Like
that. So it's really about just feeling when that thing moves. And, you know, it's like a bit of like, you know, digging for crystals or something. You know, you just kind of like pay attention and get in there and like poke around, and eventually you'll feel this thing moving, and it's like, oh, there's that. That's the, you know, the joint. And then you can feel the stuff between the joints. So usually it's like, you know, the process goes like you feel the two bones, you somehow get the two bones to move away from each other, then they squeeze back, and then you pull them apart and they squeeze back, and you do that sort of mechanically for a while. That's what the weight shifting does, right? And at some point that begins to activate this fluid enough to create its own sort of internal spring. So it's kind of like it's like an old crank motor or something. You gotta like prime the thing a little bit.
Turn that baby.
And then at some point it's able to like catch the spring of it, right? So, you know, with cloud hands, you're going slow, but it's still there. When you get into the swings, it absolutely is, you know, this spring is it's your metronome. It's the thing that you're timing everything to, because it's what you have to follow in order to, you know, bring this thing up and down. So a lot of what this, you know, the feeling of that springiness in your joints is directly related to the feeling of energy coming up and down your body. And they kind of, you know, they feed into each other. Some people feel one first, some people feel the other. But, you know, that focus on just being able to like, I like the term gushy, but, you know, just to be soft but full, you know, pung in Tai Chi terms, where you're not using any strength to hold your body up, but it has this bounce to it. So the way Bruce would always have us test it, right, was when you're in your standing posture, you have a little bit of bounce in your stance, right? And as you shift to one side, you still have that little bit of bounce in your stance. And if you start bouncing on your knee, i.e. bending your knee to bounce up and down, you didn't do it right. You lost the stability in the leg. The bounce is kind of like, it's like a spring, you know? And so it shouldn't, you know, you don't want the spring to bend. You want the spring to be straight. So your leg is bent, but it's not bending. It's basically staying straight and allowing the pressure to go through it. So it has a slight bend in it, but it's really not. I mean, like I said before, that's the main mistake people make, is they bend the knee too much.
Yeah.
And it can't spring. So it's often way more, it feels, at least in the beginning, like your leg is a lot straighter than you would want it to be.
And that has been my experience too. I think early on I was bending my knees too much, and over time I kept opening the back of my knee a little taller and taller, until I eventually was standing pretty tall. And then I was able to relax more, and my muscles held me in place more, and the bones stacked up better than bending the knee to try and keep it open or whatever. You know, you still don't want to lock it straight, but I agree that it's good advice to mess with that.
Yeah, and what then happens is your hips then start taking that pressure, which is what you're going for in all this, is to get it so that your knees don't take the pressure, your hips take the pressure and transfer it through your knee into your foot, right? And that's, you know, this idea about the knee being a weight transference joint instead of a weight bearing joint, and how that connects to what you're doing. All right. Well, this has been fun.
Great talking to you, brother.
Take care.
See you soon.
Hey, folks. Isaac again here. Thanks for listening. This was our 20th episode, so a bit of a milestone there. We appreciate all your support, and we hope to keep doing this for a while. So if you're enjoying the podcast, let us know. Tell friends, like and subscribe, all that stuff. All right. Take care.